The state of Tennessee is one of the few places where the sounds are just as breathtaking as the sights. Whether that's live music at an historic music venue, the crack of an open fire at a campsite in the wilderness, or hearing kids laughing as they explore what's right around the bend, Tennessee just sounds perfect. Start planning your trip at tnvacation.com. That's tnvacation.com. Tennessee sounds perfect.
This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Brian Fernandez, and it's the Ringgit and Cents show where we look at questions of personal finance. Our guest this morning, Gunavathi Subramaniam, a mediator and mediation trainer with Mediate to Resolve Online. Thank you so much, Guna, for joining us this morning.
Thank you for having me over.
Yeah, well, let's begin with what your group does. I understand that it's involved essentially in dispute mediation, but with the added dimension of it largely being online. Could you explain how this came about?
Right. How this came about was my co-mediator and good friend of mine, Tunku Alina Alias. Both of us have been mediators for a very long time. We have been mediators for the past 18 years.
Do you both have a legal background?
Yes, we both do have a legal background. So we've been mediators for the past 18 years, and we have a huge passion for mediation. And why we have a passion is we believe that it works. We know that it works, and it has worked. We both have mediated many disputes across the board for various different types of disputes, and we believe that it works, and we know that it works.
Okay, could you give us a quick distinction between what mediation is and what the general system is? If we look at, say, a trial situation, if you take a dispute to court, that's not a mediation kind of structure, is it? What's the name that you give to the structure in which disputants come and it's adjudicated by a judge, for instance?
Litigation, okay. the court system. Right. Okay, for mediation, what we do is, the most important thing is the mediator does not impose a solution. He does not give a decision for the parties, as opposed to litigation or in the court system or an arbitrator, where the arbitrator hands down an award, or the court, where you have a judge. Of course, the court's going to hand down a judgment at the end of the day. But what is special about mediation is it's unique because parties get to decide their own outcome. So that is one of the most interesting things about mediation. It is confidential in nature, and it also allows party, it empowers the party. It is a self-determinative process.
So, Guna, how do you then take this traditional mediation as opposed to litigation and then now move it online?
Right. Okay. So, how we went about this was, of course, firstly, we had face-to-face mediation, right? There are many organizations in the country which conduct mediation. Of course, we have the courts. We have court-annexed mediation as well. We have mediation done at the Kuala Lumpur Regional Arbitration Centre. We have mediation done at the Malaysian Mediation Centre run by the Bar Council. And, of course, there are private mediators. I'm a private mediator. So mediation can be done face-to-face. And I am happy to say that Mediate to Resolve Online is the first service provider to offer the services online.
Okay, I want to ask you, just to kind of step back a little bit, this process of mediation, is it recognized legally? Is there a legal architecture that supports mediation? And when did it come about, if it does?
Okay, there is a Mediation Act 2012, which came into to force in August 2012. So there are provisions, there are about 20 sections or provisions in the Act which govern how mediation should be conducted and who is qualified to be a mediator. So we have the Act to go by. And basically, all mediation organizations have a code of conduct which the mediator has to comply with.
So, Guna, walk us through the exact process and how it happens in an online space that with your mediate mediate to resolve online? How does that work?
See, mediation is a very flexible process. It's consensual. It has to be voluntary. So,
is it costly?
It is very, very cheap compared to a court room process, right? Okay, I will share with you, like, for example, in mediate to resolve online, our cost is only 200 ringgit. For 2 hours, which includes a pre-mediation session. So basically how this is run is, if somebody has a dispute, they can log on to our website and schedule a mediation with us. There is a form which they need to fill up. Send the form to us, and we will reply as quickly as possible. And we will schedule the mediation. We will contact the other party, of course, with the consent of the party who has submitted the request for mediation. We will then contact the other party. And if the other party has agreed to come for mediation, we then schedule the mediation within 2-3 days or within a week. So it's fairly quick. So you don't have to wait. Like, for example, like in the courts, of course, now it's quite quick. But you need to wait at least 3 to 6 months before the matter is heard in court. Whereas here, we can schedule it within a week upon receiving the request for mediation.
Now, Gunnar, this is very interesting from a personal finance perspective, which is why we are here. Mm. Obviously, there's a significant time saving that's involved. And financially, it's a huge saving. I think 200 ringgit sometimes doesn't even pay for 1 hour's of a lawyer's time.
I mean, are the lawyers up in arms about mediation? They must be, because it's going to be eating through at their bottom line.
Very, very interesting question. Because we have the Malaysian Mediation Centre of the Bar Council, which conducts mediation. I'm also a mediator with the Bar Council. And the thing is, of course, lawyers initially were not very supportive of it. But they've now come to realize that the more cases they resolve in a shorter period of time, the more cases they can take on. So it is not really eating into their livelihood as such. And people walk away happier. At the end of the day, they can shake hands and walk out of a mediation room. And no one's going to shake hands in a court of law and walk out and say, thank you very much for suing me. But in mediation, it is that personal satisfaction which you get. And that is one of the advantages of mediation as well.
Okay, we're going to come back with more. Perhaps we'll get some of the stories that you've encountered, the engagements. What exactly is special about mediation? And maybe tell us if there's even creativity in the mediation process. We'll be back with more. You're listening to our guest, because Gunawati Subramanian, mediator and mediation trainer with Mediate to Resolve Online. You're listening to Ringgit Sense. We'll be back shortly. BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Brian Fernandez, and our special guest on Ringgit and Cents today, Gunavathi Subramanian, mediator and mediation trainer with Mediate to Resolve Online. That's a company. I want to ask, Gunnar, very quickly, if you can tell us what issues can be resolved within the mediation process, or is it just open? Is it like anything we want mediated can be mediated by a group like yours?
Right. Basically, mediation is applicable for all kinds of disputes. But as I said earlier, there's a Mediation Act, and the Act actually sets out certain exceptions. So certain types of disputes cannot be mediated. For example, criminal matters, native court disputes. These are specifically stated in the Act, and they cannot be mediated. Constitutional issues, election petitions, etc.
Okay.
But other than that, all types of disputes can be mediated.
So could you, since, you know, Ringgit and Sense, we're very interested in the question of personal finance and also, you know, because people are always involved in disputes over money. And I can think of very simple things like, you know, a loan. I lent somebody a loan. It's just there's no paper, there's no contract. They promised to give it back to me. They haven't. Is that something that you could take up just between friends?
Yes. All sorts of disputes, as I said, money lending disputes, gambling disputes, things like this, which is not covered by the OFS, because now we have the Ombudsman Financial Services, which look after the concerns of the consumer in respect of banking disputes, insurance disputes. But we can go beyond that, because in mediation, you can mediate any type of dispute.
Gunnar, could you give us some specific examples of financial cases that you've handled in the past that have been resolved through your system?
Right. Basically, for financial disputes, there are, of course, landlord and tenant matters. Also, banking disputes where sometimes when a person has, a loan has gone bad, it's an NPL. Yeah. So,
and a non-performing
loan. So what happens is parties can come for mediation. Now, we're looking at it from the perspective of the lender. Why should the lender go for mediation? Because he will say, I have an agreement and, you defaulted, you have to pay. But in terms of looking at their non-performing loans, instead of going to a debt collection agency or, trying to go to the courts to have this resolved, we may also want to look at the loan officer's KPI. Yeah, he may want to clear his, have a good KPI and clear his non-performing loan outstanding list quickly.
Gunnar, that's actually a very good point, because it's in the bank's interest to have their NPLs
reduced
as small as possible.
Also, Brandon, a tweet just come in from Sue Eng, and I'm going to read it. She says, mediation is not empowering to the parties if they are not on equal grounds in terms of power relations. Now, is that true? Here you just talked about banks. Banks are huge. They're huge institutions. And then the lender, the individuals. Clearly, on the face of it, the power relations are not equal. But you're saying that this still can be good for both parties.
Yes, as I was saying, power imbalance is a very real thing in mediation. I'm not saying that it's not there. But even for a big organization like a bank versus an individual, right? The bank has its own interests as well. So that is the thing about mediation. In mediation, what the mediator is trained to do is to talk about the interests of the party. So the interest of the bank or the lender here would be to reduce their non-performing loans, as opposed to the interests of the borrower, right? The borrower may have had an unexpected event which happened to him. For instance, maybe he met with an accident. He may have lost his job. And he may genuinely be having difficulties in repaying his loan because of that event which took place in his life. Or for some people who overspend, right, they may have other reasons, because they spend too much without even looking at their budget, etc. But they have an interest as well. Their interest would be to get their lives in order. So if these things cannot come through in a court of law, because when you go to a court of law, no court is going to say, why did you default in the loan? Nobody is going to ask you on the stand why you defaulted in the repayment of the loan. But in mediation, the mediator will or should ask the parties why they defaulted. And then he gets to tell his story, which the other party gets to hear as well.
So in other words, the human element and that intervention helps in terms of bringing both parties to a common ground.
That's right. So what the mediator is going to do is to try and bridge the communication gap between the parties to look at their common interests. So what would the common interests here be in terms of a banking dispute would be for settlement of the loan.
Now, you say you're not just a mediator, but you're a mediation trainer. Do you have to, can you give us a sense of the elements that go into becoming a good mediator? Is it empathy? Is there a level of psychology beyond, say, understanding the law? Like, and you say you have a legal background. Well, what goes into becoming a good mediator?
Right. Very good question. A lot of factors. Firstly, you must be trained. You must have proper training. It's a skill which you acquire with, of course, experience. The more experience you have, the better mediator you are. But very importantly, you must have good empathizing skills. And you must have very good listening skills. You have to be very patient. You need to be an excellent listener to be a good mediator. And all this can be acquired through proper training.
But Gunnar, what percentage of disputes at the moment are actually done by mediation versus going to the courts?
Right. You see, that's the thing. Mediation came about in this country, I think, about in 1999. So it's not really new as such. I mean, it has been there. But there has been a lot of problems trying to create awareness to the public about mediation.
Coming back to the issue of, you know, that these agreements are mutual and they're not binding. It's not like a judge has said so. Do you think, to what extent, as a mediator, you have to be real with your clients? And because, you know, people are going to push their self-interested points of view in a negotiation. Do you ever find yourself pushing back and saying, well, actually, you've overstated your case. You must be, you have to understand the other person's point of view. I mean, where is it push and pull? And, you know, and do they have to trust you as a person to actually listen to you?
Well, talking about trust, right? I think the most important thing for a mediator is to build rapport with the parties from the word go. So we are trained how to do that. So, and coming back to the agreement, at the end of a mediation session, parties enter into a settlement agreement. And that settlement agreement entered into between the parties is actually a binding contract. So if one party reneges on the terms of the contract, that agreement can be, I mean, it because since it's a contract, you can sue on that contract. So there is a binding agreement at the end of the day. It's called a settlement agreement.
Well, that's interesting. Brian, you know, I wonder if you've ever been in a legal situation, you know that your lawyer is your lawyer. They are defending you. They're in your corner and they're going to do everything they can to make sure that you win this whatever dispute there is, right? But in this situation, the mediator is not in your corner, or the mediator is in everybody's corner. And I wonder if that sets up some ambiguities. How do you, you know, negotiate a situation where the person doing the arbitration is not necessarily in your corner?
But I think, Sharad, the whole premise of the mediator being an independent party makes for mindsets. I think someone that steps into this negotiation, the mindsets are very different. Nobody is on my side or nobody is on the other person's side. I can share my story and that person will give me a fair go. Is that
right? Brian. You see, the thing about mediation is the main advantage of mediation is, I think, the party empowerment of, you know, which is given to the parties in deciding their own dispute. As you said, the mediator is not going to take any one side because he is a neutral and impartial facilitator. So what he's looking at is to bridge the communication gap between the parties, make them look at their common interests and help them generate options for resolving their own dispute. So when parties get to resolve their own dispute, it is that satisfaction which they get, as opposed to someone handing down a judgment and telling you what to do. And in terms of enforcement of the judgment as well, I think if one were to decide for themselves how they would like their dispute to be resolved, I think in terms of enforcement, it's easier to enforce because they will want to be bound by their own agreement, as opposed to somebody handing down a judgment, and chances of it being enforced may not be there. And most of the cases, coming back to some figures, you see, in the courts, right, I think so far, like when we're talking about non-performing loans, etc., when you're talking about enforcement, only about 1.3% of the cases actually go for full trial. Whereas 40% of the cases have actually been withdrawn or settled, and the remaining 50% is consent judgment is taken. So one has to ask this question: why do we even have to go that far? Why not mediate before launching a lawsuit?
So Guna, this brings a very interesting point. How does, and this is a personal finance show, how does someone who, say, has a problem with their credit cards or their home loan and stuff approach the bank to go for mediation? How would they do that?
Do they go to you first, and then you as an organization go to the banks, or do they have to have an agreement with the other party to get into a situation?
Right. For credit cards, etc., they have the Ombudsman Financial Services, but there is a monetary limit there. Most of the cases, I think the monetary limit is only 25,000. So if it's anything beyond that, then, of course, they can come to us for resolution of their dispute. Okay. So we will then contact the other party, the financial institution.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.